It's time to join Monsignor Peter Fleetwood, who hasn't forgotten us this Christmas, preparing for us some special seasonal thoughts by the title of And When Did You Last See Your Father?
Some things are easier to see from a distance, especially what we experience as children. That is very clear to me when I realise where I got my interest in geography. When I was a boy, Catholics were not allowed to eat for several hours before receiving communion. So after Sunday Mass, we would go home, have a really good breakfast. Then, if the weather was good, my father would take my little brother and me for a walk to the port. It was fascinating to see the names of the cities where the big cargo vessels were registered. Montevideo, Accra, Gdańsk, and all sorts of places. I've no idea whether my father was pleased when I dug out the encyclopedia back at home and asked him to find these places on the map. But he did, and it would be hard to find anyone more interested in maps than I am now. If the weather was not good, we would hop on a bus, visit one of the city's museums or art galleries. One picture that struck me then, still does, shows a young boy dressed in blue standing on a box so he can see over a desk, on the other side of which a soldier is sitting, smiling at him. The boy's sister is behind him, crying, and his mother looks nervous. The title of the painting tells us what the man behind the desk is asking the boy. And when did you last see your father? The scene is set in the English Civil War. The boy's sister and mother both know that if he is honest, he will betray his father. Father probably brought him up to tell the truth. It may explain why his sister and his mother look so uncomfortable. Much of that was beyond me as a little boy, but it is clearer now. The boy in that picture was lucky. He had a father. Father was still alive, although the boy could well put his father's life in danger. One of my cousins once asked me a tricky question about her mother. I had buried both her parents. The other cousins told me their youngest sister had a question she was too embarrassed to ask. But she eventually managed to put it into words. Peter, where is my mum now? Very upset. Really wanted to know the answer. It was one of the most difficult situations I've ever been in, but it gave me the chance to explain what the Catholic Church teaches. Kathy was relieved she was not mad, simply because she wanted to talk to her dead, much-loved mother. Every year at Christmas, jolly songs urge us to be merry and enjoy ourselves. But there are hundreds of people in every church, every street, every family who really miss someone and would love to be able to speak to them when they are celebrating, trying to celebrate, what has become a family feast. It must be hard for them to listen to all these songs when what they want is something completely different. What struck me as a young priest was how hard Christmas is for widows or widowers. So from my second Christmas, I made it my business to visit some of them on Christmas Day before I went home to see my own family. Usually they had no idea why I was there, but they always looked pleased. I would stay just a few minutes and try in my own poor way to offer some sign of friendship and care. It was not the time for much talking or for questions. Years later, I was sent for Christmas to a really difficult parish where more than 40% of the people who could have worked had no job. Crime rate was very high. People I learned to look out for that time were those with a relative or a friend in prison. I had visions of the little boy in the picture when I saw some of the children in church. When did you last see your father? Your husband? Your boyfriend? Son? Daughter, your sister. I could be a slow learner, or perhaps God just allowed me to discover very slowly but naturally just how difficult Christmas can be for so many people. In that same parish, I led a meditation one day when we prayed not only for people in prison or people whose friends and relatives were there, but also for what we used to call unmarried mothers. and I suggested they had a friend in Jesus' mother, Mary, knew from her own experience exactly what it was like to have the finger of judgment pointed at her by narrow-minded members of the community. Within a day or two, I was reported to the Archbishop for daring to compare the Blessed Virgin Mary with an unmarried mother. The person who reported me proudly came to tell me she had done so. Perhaps I'm a really slow learner, because all I could say in reply was, "But she was an unmarried mother." That just made things worse. But I've persisted in my wickedness, and I still pray and ask others to pray on Christmas Day, people who are bringing up children without a husband or a wife to help them. The Archbishop never said anything, by the way. I was in an airport lounge recently, and the television in the corner was on. It was Sunday evening, first Sunday of Advent. Even though we should not really sing it until the 17th of December, I heard the chorus of a famous Advent hymn. "Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel has come to thee, O Israel." A man got up and walked away. It was only when he passed me that I saw the skull cap. What is it like for an Orthodox Jew to hear that hymn? It must sound very odd. But my thoughts moved on swiftly to Jerusalem and Bethlehem, where I go every year in January as part of my work. It is a privilege to go to the Holy Land. Being in particular places fills me with all sorts of emotions. But it is hard and disheartening to see the depth of fear and hatred in the faces of both Palestinians and Israelis. Everyone has an opinion on the situation there. There are experts in every group listening to or watching news reports around the world. But the sad fact is that there is no easy answer, no painless remedy. The little town of Bethlehem is hemmed in by an ugly wall these days, and it is rare for a Christian from there to get permission to visit Jerusalem, which is only 15 minutes away in a car or minibus. The deep, dreamless sleep of the people there in the time of Jesus has changed. Severe mental stress and nightmares. And there is no longer such a thing as a silent night. Christmas hymns and carols sound very different to the people who live there and anyone who has visited the Holy Land in recent times. By the way, I would never justify the firing of missiles against Israelis, or any of the wicked violence that goes on within the Palestinian community. I simply stretch out my hands in prayer to God and ask the people with me in church to pray those ancient words prayed by Jews and Christians alike. "Peace of Jerusalem, pray. Peace, your home." Christmas message is much simpler than the myth that has grown up in nearly every culture, certainly in the Western world. There's something important to all the people I've been talking about, people who have come to matter so much to me at Christmas. But it is a message that is hard to believe. Word was made flesh, dwelt among us. The way I translate that, the language of the city where I grew up, is God has become like us, has come to live in our street. That sounds banal and beneath God's dignity. Think again. That is what it is all about. We could never have deserved it. God simply loves us, all of us. Why? The only answer the gospel gives us is that God didn't want the world to wreck itself, perish, but to have everlasting life. Whatever kind of mess our lives are in, whatever state the world is in, God didn't just leave us to it, came one of us. This makes a difference to rich and poor, good and bad, everyone. Evidently, God sees beyond what looks like disaster to us. So our prayer is never simply for the peace of Jerusalem and for peace in our homes. It's also for peace in the homes, especially in the hearts of widows and widowers, of prisoners and their families, single parents, of the Christians in the Holy Land, of our friends plagued with cancer, of women about to give birth, of people whose relationships have fallen apart, of all the lonely and abandoned people in our parishes and neighbourhoods. All the people who are missing something, perhaps don't yet realise the Saviour is born at Christmas for them above all.
Heartfelt thanks there, as always, to Monsignor Peter Fleetwood, a familiar voice to our listeners.